Love Talk Radio.
Of course, to the 1.6 billion rounds that Homeland Security has bought in just the past 10 months.
It is a pleasure to be here today as the President signs the 2010 National Defense Authorization Act.
As Commander-in-Chief, I will always do whatever it takes to keep the American people safe, to defend this nation. That's why this bill provides for the best military in the history of the world. Today, I'm pleased to say that we have proved that change is possible. It may not come quickly or all at once, but if you push hard enough, it does come eventually.
You're saying kill a thoroughhead.
Kill the enemy? Absolutely.
How do you know they're an enemy without a trial, without finding out they're guilty?
We do know. Our CIA does it. We do it because, you know.
Alawaki, his 16-year-old son was murdered. He was an American citizen.
Alawaki should have been killed if his kid was with him. That's the breaks.
Do you think that the killing of Ammar Alawi's 16-year-old son, who is an American citizen, is justifiable?
I'm not going to get into Ammar Alawi's son. I know that Ammar Alawi renounced his citizenship.
His son was still an American citizen.
Did great harm to people in this country and was a regional al-Qaeda commander hoping to inflict harm and destruction on people that share his religion and others in this country. And,
that's an American citizen that's being targeted without due process of law, without trial, and he's underage, he's a minor.
I would suggest that you should have a far more responsible father if they're truly concerned about the well-being of their children.
We can't help but wonder why the Department of Homeland Security should need more than 20 times as much ammunition as it took to fight the Iraq War.
You've made some very interesting connections with some high-level intelligence people, and you were recently contacted by one. Tell us a little bit about that and what this person had to say.
Well, this was a bit of a surprise because this wasn't the normal phone call in the wee hours because they always mess up the time. This was a call from America, and it was a retired senior officer in the U.S. military, who was quite upset that something was being done to his people, and he wanted to know if I would help him get the word out. Basically, the military officers were being asked, and he called it a litmus test himself. That isn't my words. A litmus test, a way of finding out, do you fall on one side of the agenda or do you fall on the other side? Are you loyal to the Constitution and the rights, the Bill of Rights, the original intent of the founders and their writings? Are you there? Do you fall in that camp or do you fall into the camp of loyalty, fealty, abeyance to Mr. Obama? And so that was the question being asked. If in a scenario where you were asked to confiscate guns, and the public, in spite of their Second Amendment rights to hold and have armaments, if they were refusing and you received an order as high up as the president, the commander-in-chief of the armed forces, to take those arms and they were refusing, if the next order was to fire on American citizens, would you do it? That's the litmus test. Would you do it?
And why do you think the question is being posed? It appears they're getting their ducks in a line, preparing for something. What do you think is the point of all this?
You mean the body bags and the shells? You mean the preparation for internal war?
Yeah, tell us about the fact that the American government, just the military's purchased, I believe it's 1.7 billion all-point rounds. Does that tie into this?
Absolutely. Well, that shouldn't shock anyone. That 1.6, 1.7 billion rounds is merely to keep up with the population that have purchased the same number. I think the shock has been for Obama and crew is that the American public would react the way they have, given some of the moves that he's made. And, I mean, they've tracked, you know, actually when things happen. So if he's done a presidential executive order at this point in time, and the reaction has been that people have gone out en masse and bought, you know, a million new guns that next week. He realizes that he's to blame for what's happened. What he didn't think was that it would continue, that every time there was a new executive order, every time there was something that caused fear out there about the loss of freedom or liberty on the part of Americans, their reaction was to go buy more guns. Go buy more guns. And so there's armament, there's armor. And then there's provisioning. And so you've got this whole movement that has just gone crazy of people provisioning for an eventuality. When you see the government buying enough body bags to basically deal with half the population, you got to say, wait a minute, what's this about? Enough shells to deal with the population, you know, 10 times, 10 shots per person. You got to say, well, wait a minute, what's going on here? The Founding Fathers set it up well, knowing full well what had happened with the British moving in, taking over your homes, taking over your beds, and sleeping with your wives. I mean, let's not forget, you know, the extent to which it went. Under law, all of it legal. The litmus test that this gentleman referenced and asked me to share is a very real thing. Will you, in fact, shoot Americans if they won't give you your guns? Yeah, that's the question being asked at the highest level of military, and that question, of course, will be descending in the ranks. And the phone-in shows, we've had 40 American military officers phone in and say that, in fact, yes, the litmus test is taking place. Either we've been directly witness to it and have been asked the question ourselves, or we've heard from others just slightly above us in rank who've said, you won't believe what they're asking.
Considering we're so integrated with the American military forces and Canadian authorities are beginning to become more and more integrated with the Americans, how do you think this might affect Canadians should some type of martial law type scenario happen in the States?
Well, I think you know that we'll be drawn in by virtue of treaty, by virtue of agreement, and whether it's a nudge-nudge, wink-wink handshake by the good fellows, you know, Mr. Harper and Mr. Obama, there is an implication there for involvement one with the other. You mentioned martial law. Well, there's already an agreement in place that says if martial law is declared in one country, that the other country can be asked to send their troops into that country. How far does this go? Does there need to be an invitation? Or if martial law is declared in one country, are you, in fact, then able to move into the other country with troops without an invitation? How far does this go?
In your opinion, is in their mind, are people who may be of interest to fire upon?
Yeah, well, they've identified Christians, they've identified troops coming back as, you know, from the different wars. And, of course, I have to say this, they're accurate in that, because it has to do with loyalties. Where do the loyalties lie? Christians, the loyalty lies to God. Troops coming back, they actually believe in the Constitution. They believe in the nation as a whole. They don't believe in dictatorship. They fought against that kind of stuff. So they're coming back with a different foci, and they're also a different loyalty base. You know, it's a changing of the guard. It's doing away with the old loyalties and bringing in the young kids who don't have those loyalties. They are now being given new loyalties and taught how to bow the knee. Obama was smart to say that returning military could be labeled as terrorists, because of all the people who have the skills, have the organizational ability, and have the inclination to protect the country, those are the very people who would be the first ones to undo everything that Obama's doing. It's for real. It's so real to my mind that I've heard enough authority, enough people with sufficient authority, including former governors, senators, military people, admiral, general level, those people, they're all preparing. We are in precarious days. Sovereignty means nothing to us. When you see the moves of Obama and you really understand what he's done, he is a criminal in the White House. So if that's the case, how far do criminals go to win? All the way.
Truth.ca. Please go to that.
Interesting.
Yeah. I, you know, after everything Obama's done, I hate this man. I hate him with everything I have.
So does most. I don't have any respect for him. That's
no
true.
Respect whatsoever for this guy. But we understand what he is, and we understand what he's trying to do.
What he represents.
He represents everything that's anti-American. And it's absolutely frightening. This is an interesting one. There's a lot of stuff coming up now, and everybody's heard about it. And we like to bring this up on our show every week about Monsanto and the environmental issues that are coming. But as a worldwide, I'm so proud, I'm so happy that there's a worldwide
rebellion
against Monsanto and everything it stands for.
And I have to say, I'm really with the Connecticut legislature,
but our a-hole governor has not signed it yet, and he's one of those kinds of guys that can go either way.
Let's say what it is. First, a lot of people don't live in Connecticut.
Well, no, but it's labeling a GMO
that's gone through that we have that GMO food has to be labeled in Connecticut.
Right.
And
we're one of 15 states that have gone through that.
Now we're waiting for the governor's signature.
And our governor in this state is such a globalist and such a strange.
He has a lot of the ambition
to step from
Connecticut to the federal level. I just wonder what he'll do. I hope he signs it.
And it's been on his desk for at least 4 days now, and he hasn't signed it. So we're waiting. But it's really important to note that Monsanto's tipping point has
been reached.
We
shall overcome global food injustice.
Yeah,
and this is by Mike Adams, the health ranger.
Yeah, I just want to see what the planet is responding here. Damn. I'm so angry that I can't get this scenario.
Here we go. This is from Natural News.
Right. Monsanto's tipping point has been reached. We shall overcome global food injustice, GMO. And this was written today, actually.
Yes, I just said that. It's written by Mike Adams, the health ranger.
Natural News. Okay. Monsanto is now in the full retreat against the global grassroots rejection of its poisons and lies. The company is backpedaling on every front right now, even admitting defeat in Europe, and now trying to focus at last desperate efforts on the United States and Brazil. But even in the Americas, Monsanto is losing on every front. GMO labeling legislation is cropping up in over a dozen states. The global march against Monsanto demonstrated global grassroots unity against GMOs. And even the so-called science behind the safety GMOs is revealed as utter hogwash now that GMO has escape Monsanto's experimental wheat fields and contaminated commercial wheat crops in America.
Japan has halted U.S. wheat imports and South Korea joined in as well. Ben & Jerry's ice cream company has announced it is going 100% GMO free, and massive boycotts are underway against brands that tried to block the GMO labeling ballot measure in California. Jeffrey Smith of www.responsibletechnology.org has always talked about a tipping point being reached on GMOs, after which the food flood of consumer awareness and demand would force food manufacturers and retailers to begin the process of ditching GMOs. I believe that tipping point has now been reached. In fact, I believe that March Against Monsanto was the final push over the fulcrum of the tipping point, and I am ecstatic that so many people all around the world marched in the streets to protest global food injustice, while the wholly discredited mainstream media sat back and pretended the march never even took place. In
one fell swoop, the tipping point against Monsanto was triggered, and the whole world realized the mainstream media has zero credibility. I'll call that a victory any day. Hell, boy, is that true? Next steps, command from headquarters. If you're waiting for commands from headquarters to figure out what's next in the war for food justice and farming justice, the war against Monsanto and GMOs, you don't really understand this movement. The beauty of everything that's happening today is that there is no headquarters. Activists against Monsanto's are simply making this up as we go along. There's no leader. There's no secret strategy meeting. There's no talking points. There's no overarching set of milestones being discussed. There's no one person that makes all this happen.
The anti-GMO movement is all just large numbers of courageous individuals waking up and doing what needs to be done, whether that's organizing a march, posting videos online, boycotting food brands that use GMOs, or holding home viewing parties of DVDs that educate people on the truth about GMOs. This is the movement's strength.
This is why nobody can be intimidated, sued, or shut down by Monsanto.
Behind every activist, there are 1,000 more carrying the torch for food justice. The anti-GMO grassroots movement absolutely will not stop until GMOs are banned from this global food supply. And that bold statement is just as true in Venezuela and Portugal as in the United States. Everywhere that people eat food and grow food, everyone who is informed supports the idea of outlawing GMOs entirely. This goal will be achieved. I can see it now with clarity. The grassroots energy behind this movement is unstoppable. And while everyone in the grassroots anti-GMO movement may come from slightly different viewpoints on other social, political, and economic issues, they all agree that GMOs have no place in the food supply, period.
As I recently said in a speech at the March Against Monsanto in Austin, the fact that you are here in all your beautiful diversity is proof that they cannot divide us. They only unite us with their insanity. If you are part of the effort to stop Monsanto and outlaw GMOs, you are winning. You are part of the measurable, effective difference in the world, and the positive shockwaves of your efforts will be felt for generations to come. And keep up the good work. And I love this. And millions march against Monsanto. And I don't know if they, yeah, let's just play this, see if there's anything. Let's quick, oh, it's 21 minutes, but let's just play a few seconds.
A little, seconds a few minutes of it anyway. See what it says.
If we can get it.
No, it doesn't look like it. Okay.
Dallas, Texas.
Yes.
media didn't mention one word.
Nope.
Not
Detroit.
Even one word.
Detroit,
the
Michigan.
Worldwide.
Dublin, Ireland. Duluth, Minnesota.
Imagine a worldwide.
Durango, Colorado. Dusseldorf, Germany. Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Edmonton, Alberta. El Paso, Texas. Eugene, Oregon.
Hundreds of people.
Eureka, California. Fayetteville, Arkansas. Flint, Michigan. Fort Worth, Texas. Fort Collins, Colorado. Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Green Rapids, Michigan. Green Bay, Wisconsin. Halifax, Nova Scotia. Hamilton, Ontario. Honolulu, Hawaii. Houston, Texas. It's amazing.
Just this thousands and places. This video is this goes on for 21 minutes. I mean, it's all still pictures of every state,
every
country.
Every March.
Montreal, Quebec. And it's just great pictures.
Mount Pleasant, Michigan.
Such a unity, consciousness going on, and I'm so, so proud, so happy that this is happening. You know, we Lila and I played
Boston, Omaha, Nebraska,
Florida.
It's so many places.
Yeah, it's
amazing.
Yeah, it's
amazing. It's amazing. Great.
We've been in this for so long, and we're so pleased to see it happening finally.
Well, we've tried to speak out against the CMOs every week. Company.
Yeah,
and they really know how bad it is, but they did it anyway.
They did it.
And they bought off the Congress to pay it.
Yeah, and this asshole Congress and this nightmare of a president appointed a Monsanto executive to a lobbyist to the head of the FDA. I mean, we are screwed, all right? Let's be real. We are.
So if you want to see the rest of this, you can get it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's really great to check it out. And it's called Millions Against Monsanto. And go to YouTube on that. Millions Against Monsanto. So much. Let's see.
Let's see what else there is here.
Yeah. But,
we've already seen.
Yeah, I know. This one is, I love this one, because folks, I mean, now in England, if you talk against global warming, you're considered a crazy lunatic and should have psychiatric treatment, right? And also you're a terrorist, right? But Al Gore backlash, why environmentalists are celebrating the rising CO2 levels. And hopefully I can get this one up here.
Jeez.
Actually,
this is not
responding. No, for some reason. No problem. Anyway, in the meantime, since we're about halfway. Oh,
here it is.
Here we go.
We'll do this and then we'll have to go away a little bit.
We'll go to a quick music break.
Let's see who this is by.
Mike Adams,
the health ranger.
Yeah, it's a good article. It really is. And it says,
thank goodness carbon dioxide levels are finally rising ever so slightly in our atmosphere, bringing much-needed carbon dioxide to the plants and forests of the world, which have been starving for CO2. The lack of CO2 in the atmosphere is one of the most devastating limiting factors for plant growth and reforestation of the planet. And at just 400 ppm, That's just 400 micrograms per kilogram. Carbon dioxide is so low that the Earth's plant life can barely breathe. Editor's note. I have added substantially to this story since it was first published in order to attempt to educate what appeared to be a mass of brainwashed, mathematically illiterate commenters on Facebook who demonstrate a wholesale inability to process information with anything resembling rationality on this subject. Let me clarify three things before we even get into the story. Number one, I do not support the coal and oil industry, and in fact, I think they are terrible polluters of our planet for lots of reasons that have nothing to do with CO2. As it turns out, all the coal and oil being burned across our world right now only slightly impacts CO2 levels, especially when compared with CO2 emissions by ocean life. So my support of CO2 as an essential plant nutrient in no way is any kind of endorsement for the oil and coal industry. My long track record of activism against corporate monopolists is irrefutably solid. Two, yes, CO2 is an essential plant nutrient. Despite all the idiotic beliefs of people who have been brainwashed by Al Gore into believing scientific mythologies, higher CO2 levels support faster plant growth and regreening of our planet, period. Anyone who disagrees with this is flatly uninformed, brainwashed, or just plain ignorant of plant biology. And that's a lot of people. Recent science is proving that rising CO2 levels are, in fact, expanding plant growth and reforestation around the world. Read increase in carbon dioxide levels, greening the deserts of naturalworldnews.com, or read the press release from the original researchers out of Australia who documented this correlation. And everybody needs to read www.planetneedsco2.org. Number three, the current level of CO2 in the Earth's atmosphere is 400 ppm. By comparison, oxygen exists in the atmosphere at 210,000 ppm. When you exhale, your own breath contains 40,000 ppm of CO2. And if you know anything about emergency first aid, then you know that breathing this 40,000 ppm of CO2 into another person's body, mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, is a life-saving action. It's not uncommon for CO2 to reach levels of 3,000. I can't see. PPM in homes, schools, and offices. OSHA allows workers to work in environments with up to 5,000 ppm of CO2. Because, again, oxygen is present at 210,000 ppm, vastly outweighing the CO2. So all of this talk of carbon dioxide threatening the entire planet at just 400 ppm, less than one-half of a 100,000th of the air, is pure nonsense. Total quack science, fear-mongering.
In fact, most of what we've all been told about CO2 over the past few years is a complete lie. It's time to stop believing these lies and wake up to reality. Most importantly, stop defending the CO2/global warming hoax. Yet CO2 is rising, but it's mostly from the non-human activity, and rising levels actually support forests and plants everywhere. How did I wake up to this information? It's simple. I used to be a believer in CO2 hoax until I really began to study plant physiology and aquaponics production. Only then did I discover that CO2 is a vital nutrient for plant growth, and that levels of CO2 in the atmosphere were radically deficient for optimal reforestation and plant biology. My awakening to this in no way means I endorse coal or oil industries, both of which are dirty polluters of the planet, but I am no longer allowing myself to be conned by the likes of Al Gore, who has successfully convinced far too many people that their own breath is a global pollutant that needs to be regulated and taxed. The GO2 scam is nothing more than global tax money-making scheme being pushed by people who who hope to get rich off our collective guilt for a problem that entirely fabricated and fictional. My original story continues here.
Throughout the history of our planet, atmospheric CO2 was much, much higher, and it supported eras of lush rainforests, rapid plant growth, and far greater biodiversity than we see today. In fact, 525 million years ago, Earth's atmospheric CO2 levels were as high as 7,000 ppm. And far from the planet dying, as global warming hoaxers pushers try to claim, it was one of the most lush, biodiverse times in our planet's history. As the following chart clearly shows, and you can't see it, CO2 levels are at one of their lowest levels in the history of our planet.
And carbon dioxide is greening the planet. Global warming alarmists and hoaxers, of course, have warned that CO2 levels crossing the threshold of 400 ppm will spell certain doom for the human race. What they don't mention is that rising CO2 levels actually set off a global greening, complete with forest regrowing at an accelerated rate, gardens producing more food, and arid regions seeing a restoration of green plants. In fact, a study just published in Geophysical Research Letters has documented that a 14% increase in CO2 levels in the atmosphere gave rise to a 5 to 10% increase in green foliage, with a total increase in plant coverage of 11%. That study is entitled CO2 Fertilization and Increased Maximum Foliage Coverage Across the Globe's Warm and Environments. And that study refers to CO2 as a fertilizer that causes a fertilization effect, as this study authors explain. Our results confirm that the anticipated CO2 fertilization effect is occurring alongside ongoing anthropogenic perturbations of the carbon cycle, and that the fertilization effect is now a significant land surface process. And CO2, you see, isn't a pollutant. It's a nutrient.
By the way, your body is 18% carbon and 65% oxygen. I'm going to preempt some stupid Facebook trolls who will say, "Not true, your body is 75% water," by answering in advance that H2O is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. Hydrogen has such a low atomic weight, however, that it doesn't contribute more than about 10% to your body's total mass. Then again, trying to teach science to Facebook trolls is a lot like trying to teach pigs to write JavaScript. In total, you are 83% made of the same stuff as CO2, just in a different molecular arrangement. CO2 is, of course, constantly reformed and recycled through the planetary ecosystem. Ocean biological activity alone produces 90 billion tons of CO2 each year, many multiples of the far smaller amount produced by human activity, about 6 billion tons. If CO2 alone caused global warming and global death, we'd all be dead by now. It turns out that CO2 actually helps fertilize the growth and restoration of plants and forests.
Ocean plants love carbon dioxide, too. By the way, it's not just land plants that are starving for CO2. Marine plants also need more CO2, and most marine biology came into being in a time when CO2 levels were far higher than they are today. The higher CO2 levels are in the atmosphere, the more CO2 gets absorbed into ocean water, making it available to help marine life thrive, plants thrive. This CO2, importantly, is also used to build coral reefs. Wait a second. Haven't we all been told that CO2 is destroying coral reefs? I used to think so, too, because I hadn't scrutinized the science closely enough. But if you really dig into this issue, it turns out that coral reefs are largely being destroyed by toxic chemical runoffs from human activity, not from CO2. And if you love plants and forests and gardens, you got to love CO2. The bottom line in this and all of this is that you love plant life on planet Earth. You've got to love carbon dioxide. CO2 is the key ingredient that's needed to bolster the rapid growth of nearly all planets. And right now, Earth's atmosphere is in a state of carbon dioxide deficiency.
That's why professional greenhouse owners actually pump CO2 into their greenhouses to increase plant production. Rising CO2 levels are a huge benefit to plant life across the planet. Hairvine plants to sequester CO2 will cause an artificial reduction in this crucial plant nutrient, resulting in the mass global die-off of plants and the thinning of the forest. Carbon sequestration is quite literally plant starvation in an attack against Mother Nature. So don't buy into the disinfo hawked by CO2 alarmists like Al Gore. They are pushing an utterly fictional story about how CO2 will destroy the world and end human civilization if we don't stop its rise. I welcome rising CO2 levels, and being scientifically trained, I know that carbon dioxide only exists at less than 1/1000th of the atmosphere. In fact, it's currently at less than half of 1/1000th of the atmosphere. That's an extremely small amount of CO2, just 400 ppm. And it's just barely enough to keep the Earth's plants from dying en masse.
Conclusion. CO2 is an essential plant nutrient that accelerates the growth of plants, gardens, and forests. CO2 is present in an atmosphere that just 400 ppm. By comparison, oxygen is present at 210,000 ppm. There is barely any CO2 in the atmosphere at all. And higher CO2 levels means better reforestation and greening of the planet. As CO2 levels rise, barren regions are able to regreen with trees that couldn't grow there before.
CO2 is chronically deficient in the atmosphere today. Many plants are starving for carbon dioxide. And lastly, no, I don't support the oil and gas industries. In fact, there is hardly any link between energy usage and the rise of CO2 in the atmosphere. The vast majority of CO2 emissions come from biology, not burning fossil fuels.
There you go, folks. That's the reality. And I have to tell you, Natural News, you check it out. It's a great site. It really is a great site. And just freaks me out. Just freaks me out that there's so many a-holes out there that still believe that Al Gore, knows what he's talking about, and that the world is globally warming to the extent that we can't, and yet it's actually cooling. Right? And they can say, well, look at the Arctic circles. Look at what's happening up there in the glaciers and all that crap.
Actually, what we're having is climate change.
There is a climate change, there's no question about it. But at the same time, I'm looking at the our own garden this year, our own backyard, and I've never seen such great plant growth, okay, in this year. All the flowers are blooming, all the plants are coming up. We had a normal season, okay, growing season. April and May.
So far.
And just everything.
And a lot of rain, which
plants love. But it's like a bit of a normal growing season, all right? And everything is coming up perfectly, and it's been humid. It's been, it's just been normal.
At least in New England.
At least here. But it's a beautiful year. I'm going to take this a quick break. I think everybody needs one after that article. And, I'll be back. We'll be back in a few minutes. I got an article coming up that I'd like to read. And it's about the what they call the prostitutes as the mainstream media. Boy, is this real. It's so real. I've never seen it so bad in all my years. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you.
back, and we have the article up, America's Greatest Affliction, The Prestitute Media, by Dr. Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research. When Gerald Salenti... When Gerald Salenti branded the American media prostitutes, he got it right. The U.S. print and TV media and NPR... Or for Washington and the corporations, reporting the real news is their last concern. The prostitutes are a ministry of propaganda and cover-up. This is true of the entire Western media, a collection of bought and paid-for whores. It seems that every day I witness a dozen or more examples. Take May 31st, for example. The prostitutes report that U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and his German counterpart are working on Russia to convince that country to be a party to peace in Syria by not supplying the Syrian government, whose country has been invaded with arms. Kerry and the Israelis especially do not want Russia to deliver the S-300 anti-aircraft missile system to Syria. This was the extent of the prostitutes' report. The prostitutes made no mention of the fact that the invasion of Syria by Al-Qaeda-affiliated radical Muslims was organized and equipped by Washington via its proxies in the region, such as Saudi Arabia and the oil emirates. America is sufficiently stupid to rely on the prostitute media. Do not know that it is not Syrians who want to overthrow their government, but Washington, Israel, and radical Islamists who object to Syria's secular, non-confrontational government.
One might think that the U.S. media would wonder why Washington prefers to have an al-Qaeda governing Syria than a non-confrontational secular government. But such a question is off-limits for the U.S. media. Israel, like Washington, which so far hides behind proxies, has actually openly committed war crimes as defined by the Nuremberg trials of Nazis by initiating unprovoked aggression against Syria by militarily attacking the country. In reporting Kerry's pressure on Putin, prostitutes made no mention that the Washington-backed attempted overthrow of Syrian government has run into difficulty, causing President Obama to ask the question to come up with a no-fly plan, which means, according to the Libya precedent, NATO, or U.S. air attacks on Syrian government forces. As the S-Media missiles are a defense weapon, Obama plans to send in Western or Israeli air force to attack the Syrian army is why Kerry is pressuring Russia not to honor its contract to deliver to Syria the S-300 missiles, which can knock U.S., NATO, and Israeli aircraft out of the sky. Those who believe that Kerry could have made a difference as president must be delusioned to see what a warmongering whore he is. In America, marketing is everything and truth is nothing. Oh, boy, is he right on that. Mm-hmm. The real news story is that Washington is trying to convince Putin to acquiesce to Washington's overthrow of Syrian government so that Russia can be evicted from its only naval base in the Mediterranean Sea, thus making it Washington's Sea, Washington Mare Nostrum. The American prostitutes or prostitutes, put all the onus on Russian government for not helping Washington to overthrow the Syrian government in order that Washington has another victory over Russia and can start next on Iran. Well, William Hague, who serves with Washington's approval as British Foreign Secretary to the shame of a once proud nation, made this clear when he stated or declared that he wanted a solution without Assad. We do not accept the stay of Assad. This is amazing hypocrisy because the Syrian government is more respectful of human rights than Washington and London. While Kerry was trying to con Putin, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said that the Obama administration's immediate priority was removing Assad from power. So for the U.S. and U.K., peace means the overthrow of the Syrian government by force. Why isn't the United Nations protesting? The answer is that the countries and the U.N. representatives have been purchased by Washington. Money talks. Integrity and justice don't. Integrity and justice are poverty inflicted. The UN belongs to the evil empire. Washington owns it. The American empire has the money. It pays for the headlines and for the budgets that let the UN delegates enjoy New York City. In the world today, integrity is worthless, but money is valuable. And Washington has the money because as the dollar is the world reserve currency, it can be printed in sufficient quantities to purchase every country's government, including our own. 1 year out of office and Tony Blair was worth $35 million. Look at the amazing Clinton riches. According to new reports, $3.2 million was spent on Chelsea's wedding. Haig said that the UK and France seek to end the ban on arming Syrian rebels. Haig did not explain how the invasion force was armed if there is a ban against arming it. But Haig did tell us who the invading force is, and the Syrian National Coalition, which consists of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, still the American puppet, and the United States, Britain, France, Turkey, Germany, and Italy. Italy? It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the talk about a Syrian rebel is pure BS, and Syria is confronted with an attempted overthrow of its government by the U.S. and its puppet states. Kerry is trying to convince Putin to let Washington overthrow Syria.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
As if this wasn't enough, also on May 31st, I listened to Dion and David Brooks on National Public Radio discuss the state of the Obama presidency. Both were protective of our president. Neither would dare say the military security complex's president, Wall Street's president, the Israeli lobby's president, Monsanto's president, the mining and fracking president. Obama is our president. Both Brooks and Dion agreed that the media had got rid of the Benghazi issue and that the IRS persecution of Tea Party members was under the media's control and was not a threat to Obama. David Brooks did acknowledge that there were economic problems ignored and no new ideas. However, the blatant fact that under Obama the U.S. is in constitutional crisis, well described by Dr. Francis Boyle, professor of international law at the University of Illinois, was not mentioned by NPR's pundits, who define correct thought for the NPR audience, people too busy to pay attention.
In America today, the executive branch, an explicit violation of the U.S. Constitution, detains indefinitely or murders any U.S. citizen alleged without proof by an unaccountable member of the executive branch to be in any way associated with abroad but undefined terms, terrorism, even innocently as a donor to Hungary or ill Palestinian children. The executive branch clearly violates the U.S. Constitution and U.S. statutory laws against torture and spying on citizens without warrants. And Congress does not impeach the president for his obvious crimes, and the federal judiciary enables them. And
President Nixon.
Yeah.
Was driven from office because he lied about when he learned of a burglary for which he was not responsible. President Clinton was impeached by the House of Representatives for lying about a sexual affair with the White House intern, Monica Lewinsky. President George W. Bush took America to wars based on obvious lies, and so did President Obama. Both administrations are guilty of war crimes in almost every possible infraction of the constitutional and international law. Yet no prestitute member of the media would dare mention impeachment, and the House would never bring that charge. There is no doubt whatsoever that in the 21st century presidents, their lawyers, Justice Department, CIA, and black operatives have broken law after law, and there is no accountability. For the prostitutes, this is a non-issue. Rule of law, constitution? We don't need no stinking rule of law, constitution. For the prostitutes, the bought and paid-for whores for evil, the issues are Obama's stable poll numbers, teenage girls arrested for fighting at a kindergarten graduation ceremony, Microsoft's Bill Gates extended his lead over Mexico's Carlos Slim as the world's richest person, and the $14 million girl, Beyonce, rakes it in. Constitutional crisis? What is that? I mean, really, look at Beyonce's legs. Didn't you hear the dollar rose today?
The prostitutes have not investigated any important issue, not 911, not the accumulation of unaccountable power in the executive branch, not the demise of the Bill of Rights, not the Boston Marathon bombing, not the endless and unexplained wars against Muslims who have not attacked the U.S. The Boston Marathon saga reached new levels of absurdity with the FBI murder of Ibrahim Tadashev, who being pressured to admit to various associated crimes. The prostitutes first reported that Tadashev was armed. It was a gun, then a knife. Then after the prostitutes duly reported the false information planted on them, which of the was sufficient to explain Tadashev's murder. The FBI admitted that the victim was unarmed, and nevertheless, he was shot 7 times. Once to the back of the head.
I didn't realize
No, me either. His father wants to know why the FBI assassinated his son, but his prostitutes could not care less. Don't expect any answers from the American press and the TV media or from NPR, an organization that pretends to be a listener station but is financed by corporate donations. Yeah, NPR, National Petroleum Radio. Those sons of bitches own all 3 stations in this area. And, you know, it's just criminal.
That's probably true a lot of other places. They've
just taken over everything here. And we can't get a straight.
We don't have any radio.
No, we just got prostitutes.
You'd have to buy radio.
Yeah, Jewish prostitutes. And how Todashev's murder for Gestapo justice, where is the difference? A bullet in the back of the head. And America is the shining light on the hill, the font of freedom, the democracy brought to the world courtesy of the military. Security complex out of the barrels of the guns and hellfire missiles from drones and relentless propaganda in the schools, universities, and media.
But you will never hear about it from the prostitutes.
Oh, you know it.
And that was from Global Research. And you know what? Almost right to the end of the show.
And
there's a lot more news out there, folks.
Oh, there's so much
more. You've got to go to alternative sources to get it.
I'm going to recommend David Icke's site, and I'm going to recommend Alex Jones' site, and I'm going to recommend Global Research, and I'm going to recommend so many places. Every place you can go, naturalnews.com. Just keep looking out there, folks, and, you'll find it. Oh, God. So, anyway. Oh, Bill Clinton, let me end on this. Bill Clinton was just paid $500,000 to speak in honor of the Israeli president. And Jewish National Fund has paid U.S. President Bill Clinton $500,000 to deliver a speech at a ceremony in honor of the 90th president.
90th birthday.
Birthday of Israeli President Shimon Peres. He was the guy who invented the... He was the guy that invented the envelope bomb.
Oh.
Yeah. And he did it against the British when they took over the, So, anyway.
He sold his soul a long time ago, that guy.
Clinton's an a-hole.
Just sold his soul.
He's a Satanist. Globalist Satanist.
He has no soul anymore.
So, anyway, folks, that's the end of our show. We join us tomorrow night when we hopefully have some union news, and I think Larry will be joining us.
That'd be great.
Norman. And in the meantime, we wish you the very best. And
have a good night, and don't forget to tune us in tomorrow night. Have a great night, folks.
Good night.
Thanks for being with us.
Yes.